Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading the San Angelo Standard Times newspaper, published the week of Sunday, June 26th, 2021. There are very few locally written articles from the Standard Times this week. We will be reading those articles, and then we'll be adding Texas-based articles to those few local articles we have. And we also have a few feature articles that we'll be reading as well. Our first article is from the front page of the Standard Times, Thursday, June 30th. For human smugglers, it's all about the money. Tragedy in Texas is grim reminder of dangers migrants face, by Mark Ramirez, USA Today. From people stuffed into steel boxes, compartments hidden under the sleeping quarters of diesel truck cabs or tractor trailers, specially modified to maximize the amount of human cargo, Sheriff Urbino Benny Martinez in Brooks County, Texas, has seen human smuggling conditions that make his blood boil. Any place they can fit a body, they're going to do it, said Martinez, who works about 2 hours from the U.S.-Mexico border. They'll bring them in tractor trailers, U-Haul trucks, pickup beds, anything that will take a body in there. It's all about the money. Monday's discovery of dozens of bodies in an abandoned tractor trailer in sweltering San Antonio was the deadliest illustration yet of the conditions faced by migrants hoping to reach the United States. The tragedy has claimed at least 53 lives. The number rose Wednesday after two more migrants died, according to the Associated Press, and left a dozen more suspected migrants hospitalized. Experts said the disaster points to the recklessness with which smugglers act to transport migrants to reap the most profit. These people were left there to die, Martinez said. If you get yourself into a small space without oxygen, and when you have that many people in small quarters, people are going to die. The advent of Mexican organized crime rings into human smuggling operations in recent years has turned crossing the border into a major enterprise, he and others said. At the same time, better border enforcement is forcing smugglers to take riskier pathways into the United States while using approaches like jam-packed, unventilated tractor trailers that put more people at risk without concern for their comfort or safety. They have no concern for humanity, none, said Jack Staten, acting special agent in charge for ICE, Homeland Security Investigations, El Paso, in a report posted this year to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security website. They look at people as merchandise, as a way to make money. More effective border enforcement has persuaded people to turn to smugglers, said Doris Meisner, director of the U.S. Immigration Policy Program at the Migration Policy Institute, a nonpartisan independent think tank in Washington, D.C. It's much harder to cross the border than it was 20 years ago, Meisner said. That's why migrants looking to cross illegally might pay extra to secure transport in a tractor trailer, according to the Homeland Security report. The chances of making it across are greater compared with those of crossing on foot. With smugglers operating more such trips during the summer, however, they run the risk of facing life-threatening temperatures. People who turn to smugglers might be persuaded to cross dangerous waterways or to journey through treacherous wastelands that have been largely untraveled for that reason. Each of them means money for the smugglers, from $3,000 to $10,000 apiece, said Fernando Garcia, executive director of the Border Network for Human Rights, an immigrant and human rights advocacy group based in El Paso. As we see more militarizing of the border, the only beneficiary of that are the cartels. The U.S. government is pushing them into the hands of these smugglers. In March 2021, 13 people died near Holtville, California, about 10 miles north of the U.S.-Mexico border, after a semi-truck hit a Ford Expedition carrying 25 people. The vehicle, which had had its seats removed, had entered the United States, along with the Chevy Suburban carrying 19 people, through a 10-foot hole cut into the border fence. 5 months later, 10 people died and 20 were hurt when a van carrying suspected migrants crashed in Texas's Brooks County. In 2017, 10 Mexican and Central American people died and 15 others suffered extreme dehydration in a similar incident in which an 18-wheeler was abandoned outside a San Antonio Walmart. The scenario has played out not only throughout the Southwest, but off the Southeast U.S. coast. In January, nearly 40 people died after their overloaded boat capsized off the Florida coast. A lone survivor said the vessel had sailed from the Bahamas, a well-worn stepping stone for migrants into the United States. 30 years ago, smuggling people was a mom-and-pop business, Garcia said. Your family would actually get across, and it would cost almost nothing. Now it's big business, and people are dying in numbers we have not seen before. Immigrants and refugees facing violence, persecution, or a lack of economic opportunity in their homelands are driven to uproot themselves, unaware of the perils, or desperate enough to take them on, Garcia said. Smugglers give people false promises, he said. They bring some people all the way from Central America and Southern Mexico with rosy narratives about how they will cross with no problem. According to the Department of Homeland Security, more women, children, and families are risking the trip in recent years. They face the risk of assault, rape, kidnapping, or being forced into human trafficking. While the death total from the latest incident in San Antonio is shocking, Meisner said, it doesn't mean the situation is unique. It's happened before, it will happen again, and it's happening all over the world, she said. People are willing to take the risk because of the possibility that they might succeed, and that chance leads people to take very big risks. Addressing the problem, Meisner said, will require some broad policy changes and political will. But in the meantime, the smugglers hold all the cards. Fireworks shows, burn bans, and events. Here's what to know about July 4th in San Angelo by Rosanna Frere, published June 28th. From fireworks shows to burn bans to events, here's what to know about the 4th of July in San Angelo and surrounding area. On June 24th, Tom Green County Judge Stephen Floyd filed a declaration of disaster and order for the county due to dangerous drought conditions. The declaration prohibited the use, sale, and discharge of all fireworks in Tom Green County for 60 hours, which expired at 1:47 a.m. Monday, June 27th. The declaration did not prohibit any sanctioned fireworks displays by the city of San Angelo, fire marshal within the city limits. Using fireworks within 5,000 feet of and inside the San Angelo city limits is a Class C misdemeanor, punishable by a fine of maximum of $2,000, according to the San Angelo Police Department. The police department said if you ignite fireworks outside the restricted zone, to follow these safety tips. Always read and follow label directions. Have an adult present. Buy from reliable sellers. Use outdoors only. Always have water, a garden hose, and a bucket on hand. Never experiment or make your own fireworks. Light only one firework at a time. Never relight a dud firework. Wait 15 to 20 minutes, then soak it in a bucket of water. Never give fireworks to children. If you must store fireworks, do so in a cool, dry place. Dispose of fireworks properly by soaking them in water, then disposing of them in your trash can. Leaving used, discarded fireworks on the ground is littering. Never throw or point fireworks at other people. Never carry fireworks in your pocket. Never shoot fireworks in metal or glass containers. The shooter should always wear eye protection and never have any part of the body over the firework. Stay away from illegal explosives. The safest way to enjoy fireworks is to attend a display by a licensed pyrotechnic operator. The City of San Angelo co-sponsors a free display on the evening of July 3rd at the Bill Ayler Sr. Memorial River Stage. Events and fireworks displays. The Santa Rita Star-Spangled Celebration will be held Saturday, July 2nd in Big Lake at the North Park. The event is free with live music from Wade Bowen, Randall King, and more, starting at 4:30 p.m. There will be food and arts and crafts vendors. A fireworks show will start at 9:30 p.m. Gates open at noon to the park. A Star-Spangled Banner concert and fireworks is on Sunday, July 3rd at the Bill Ayler Jr. Memorial River Stage at 16 East Avenue A. Performances will begin at 6:30 p.m. with live music by the San Angelo Community Band, Mariachi Alma Mexicana, West Texas Jazz Orchestra, and the Air Force Band of the West. The Crockett County Freedom Fest is on Sunday, July 3rd in Ozona, with live music from Sid Anderson, Tristan Merez, and Braxton Keith beginning at 8 p.m. There will be a car show, team roping events, a cornhole tournament, vendors, and more. Fireworks will be launched from the dam across from Goodfellow Rec Camp on Monday, July 4th. The show by the Lake Nasworthy Homeowners Association can be watched along the lake and will begin after sunset around 9 p.m. Viewers can listen to 94.7 FM for synced music for the fireworks. Little Caesars opens third location in San Angelo by Rosanna Frere, published June 28th. Little Caesars Pizza has opened its third location in San Angelo on Bell Street near Goodfellow Air Force Base. The restaurant opened earlier this month with indoor seating and a drive-thru at 1505 South Bell Street. The construction project took over a year with a proposed budget of $419,500, according to City of San Angelo building permits records. The other two locations in San Angelo are at 2315 North Bryant Boulevard and 1823 Knickerbocker Road. Uvalde victim Uzziah Garcia laid to rest in hometown of San Angelo by Rosanna Frere, published June 25th. Uzziah Garcia, who died during the mass shooting at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, was laid to rest in his hometown of San Angelo on Saturday, June 25th. The Emmanuel Baptist Church was filled with flowers, pictures, and people mourning for the last of the 21 funerals for the victims of the tragedy on May 24th. The service for the 10-year-old was followed by a committal at Lawn Haven Memorial Gardens. Uzziah was born on August 13, 2011 in San Angelo to his parents Sergio Garcia and Mandy Marie Renfro. Uzi attended Day Head Start and TLCA in San Angelo, according to his obituary. "We will forever miss Uzi, but most of all his contagious laugh, his shaggy hair, and silly jokes," the obituary stated. Uzziah's aunt, Leticia Garcia, read a eulogy talking of the life Uzi lived and how the family has been in mourning. "A couple nights ago, I got to see Uzi in my dream," she said. "I kissed him, I hugged him, and I told him I loved him, and he told me he loved me. I told him Jesus loves you, and he told me Jesus loves you in my ear." Garcia talked about the unbreakable bond Uzziah and his dad had. "He wanted to grow up just like him," Leticia said. "My brother was Uzziah's superhero. He did everything my brother did as a kid. He would run around in capes made of towels and clothespins, wearing these superhero capes and masks like his dad." Leticia said they are going to miss everything about Uzziah. "His handsome face, his smile, his messy hair, his perfectly imperfect teeth. his laugh, his hugs, his kisses, and his entire presence, she explained. We know you are in heaven now. You took a big piece of our hearts with you, and life will never be the same. Protest takes place on Tom Green County courthouse steps after Roe v. Wade overturned, by Rosanna Frere, published June 25th. San Angelo residents stood on the Tom Green County courthouse steps Saturday morning for a protest after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned its landmark Roe v. Wade decision Friday. The decision reversed almost 50 years of federal constitutional protections for abortion and will allow state legislatures to set distinctive limits on the procedure. The ruling effectively ends abortion access in Texas, where a so-called trigger law is set to go into effect in the coming weeks, making it a felony to perform an abortion at any point in pregnancy. One of the protesters, Lakeview graduate Gwendolyn Watkins, said, "They, the Supreme Court, are ruining my life before it even starts," as she plans to attend college in the fall. "I'm just about to go out and enter the world. I want to feel safe and supported by the government," the 17-year-old said. "This is the exact opposite." Anna Martine, a San Angelo resident, planned the event with hopes people in the community would feel supported during this time. "We want people to know we are here," Martine said. "People in our town need to support locally, even if others don't support them." Attendee Bonnie Guess said she was appreciative of Martine for organizing the event. "When you're a blue dot in a red sea, you do feel very isolated," Guess said. "These events give me a purpose and give me somewhere to put my anger, rage, frustration, and fear." Now here's a related article published in the San Angelo Standard Times. Beto O'Rourke suggests he could overcome abortion ruling as governor. He could not. Even if Beto O'Rourke upsets Greg Abbott in November, he'd be the underdog in any abortion battle with the Republican-controlled legislature. By John C. Moritz, Corpus Christi Caller Times, published June 24th. Democrat Beto O'Rourke wasted little time using Friday's 6-3 Supreme Court ruling striking down Roe v. Wade as a way to galvanize the support of abortion rights advocates for his challenge to Republican Governor Greg Abbott. "The only way to overcome today's decision is to win this race for governor," O'Rourke said in an email statement that went out only minutes after the high court's ruling was handed down. "The Supreme Court has sent this back to the states, and our state's current governor has outlawed abortion beginning at conception with no exception for rape or incest." A separate email from Cecile Richards, O'Rourke's fundraising chairwoman and former president of Planned Parenthood's political arm, landed shortly afterward containing a plea for donations to the Democrats' campaign as a way of safeguarding abortion rights in Texas. Both messages promised urgent action and suggested, at least indirectly, that the governor might have unilateral power to affect abortion law. But even if O'Rourke upsets Abbott's bid for a third term in November, he would be the decided underdog in any legislative battle over abortion. The Republican-dominated legislature in 2021 enacted a trigger law designed to kick in whenever the Roe decision was struck down. The Texas law makes it a felony to perform an abortion at any point in pregnancy. Republicans are heavily favored to retain control of both legislative chambers in the coming elections, regardless of the outcome of the governor's race. Democrats would need more than just control of the governor's mansion to make major changes to the abortion policy direction in Texas, said Brandon Rottinghouse, a political science professor at the University of Houston and a keen observer of Texas politics. "Given how entrenched anti-abortion politics is in the policy and personnel in Texas, it would take a major political earthquake to change things." Republican Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who is favored to win a third term in November, has made eliminating legal abortion in Texas a centerpiece of his political career. Patrick issued a statement that highlighted anti-abortion legislation he's backed, both as a state senator and as the chamber's presiding officer, and called the court's ruling a watershed victory for his efforts. Clear from his remarks was that any effort to roll back the trigger law when the legislature reconvenes in January would be doomed from the start if he remains at the helm in the Senate. For his part, Abbott said the court's ruling was correctly decided and touted legislation he has signed over his two terms that limited abortion rights within the confines of Roe v. Wade. Texas is a pro-life state, and we have taken significant action to protect the sanctity of life, Abbott said. Chris Evans, O'Rourke's campaign spokesman, acknowledged that the Democrats' power to change Texas abortion policy would be limited, assuming he is elected. But supporters of reproductive freedom could expect no relief if Abbott is awarded a third term. The Supreme Court said this is now up to the states, so Texas will need a governor who will protect every woman's right to make her own decisions over her own body, Evans said. Family Shelter in San Angelo requests donations of household items from staff reports, published June 24th. The Family Shelter in San Angelo is requesting donations of various household items for its emergency safe haven facility. An increase in domestic violence cases during June has pushed the shelter's occupancy to 28 adults and children, according to a release from the shelter Friday, June 24th. Items the shelter is seeking include paper towels, toilet paper, plates, bowls, serveware, napkins, gallon Ziploc bags, and 39-gallon trash bags, laundry detergent, bleach, Pine Sol, baby bottles, baby wash, and sunblock are also needed. Items can be brought to the shelter's porch at 79 Gillis Street. Clothing donations can be taken to Rust Street Ministries from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. For more information, contact the Family Shelter's program director, Valerie Tillery, at 325-655-5775. Our next state article comes from the front page of the San Angelo Standard Times from Wednesday, June 29th. 50 migrants die in abandoned trailer. Trailer abandoned in heat of San Antonio. By Eric Gay and Elliot Spaggett, Associated Press, San Antonio. 50 people died after being abandoned in a tractor trailer in the sweltering Texas heat, one of the worst tragedies to claim the lives of migrants smuggled across the border from Mexico to the U.S. More than a dozen people had been taken to hospitals, including four children. A city worker heard a cry for help from the truck on a San Antonio back road shortly before 6 p.m. Monday and discovered the gruesome scene, Police Chief William McManus said. Hours later, body bags lay spread on the ground near the trailer, and bodies remained inside as authorities responded. 46 people were found dead at the scene, authorities said. Four more later died after being taken to hospitals, said Bexar County Judge Nelson Wolf, the county's top elected official. Among the dead were 39 males and 11 females, he said. San Antonio Mayor Ron Nirenberg said those who died had families who were likely trying to find a better life. This is nothing short of a horrific human tragedy, Nirenberg said. Attempts to cross the U.S. border from Mexico have claimed thousands of lives in both countries in recent decades. President Joe Biden called the latest deaths horrifying and heartbreaking. He said initial reports that smugglers or human traffickers were to blame. Exploiting vulnerable individuals for profit is shameful, as is political grandstanding around tragedy, and my administration will continue to do everything possible to stop human smugglers and traffickers from taking advantage of people who are seeking to enter the United States between ports of entry, he said in a statement. The home countries of all the migrants and how long they were abandoned on the side of the road were not immediately known. 22 were from Mexico, 7 from Guatemala, and 2 from Honduras, Robert Velasco Alvarez, head of the North America Department in Mexico's Foreign Relations Department, said on Twitter. South Texas has long been the busiest area for illegal border crossings. Migrants ride in vehicles through Border Patrol checkpoints to San Antonio, the closest major city from which point they disperse across the United States. Wolf said Tuesday that authorities believed the truck came from Laredo, a border city about 150 miles south. They had just parked it on the side of the road, Wolf said. Apparently, it had mechanical problems and left it there. The sheriff thinks it came across from Laredo. Officials were asking neighboring counties to help with the number of bodies, he said. San Antonio has been a recurring scene of tragedy and desperation in recent years involving migrants in the back of semi-trailers. 10 migrants died in 2017 after being trapped inside a truck parked at a San Antonio Walmart. In 2003, the bodies of 19 migrants were found in a sweltering truck southeast of the city. More than 50 migrants were found alive in a trailer in 2018, driven by a man who said he was to be paid $3,000 and was sentenced to more than 5 years in prison. These drivers, they take money from the cartels and so on, said State Senator Roland Gutierrez, a Democrat whose district includes the site of the abandoned truck discovered Monday. I'm sure many times these trucks end up at their destination successfully. Unfortunately, this has now happened all too often. Other incidents have occurred long before migrants reached the U.S. border. In December, more than 50 died when a semi-trailer filled with migrants rolled over on a highway in southern Mexico. In October, Mexican authorities reported finding 652 migrants packed into six trailers near the U.S. border. They were stopped at a military checkpoint. The truck discovered Monday was abandoned on the outskirts of San Antonio next to a railroad track in an area surrounded by auto scrap yards that brush up against a busy freeway. Officers arrived to find a body on the ground outside the trailer and a partially opened gate to the trailer. Three people were taken into custody, but it was unclear if they were definitively connected with human trafficking, McManus said. The trailer was gone Tuesday morning, and access to the area where it was found remained blocked. 16 people were taken to hospitals with heat-related illnesses, with four later dying. At least four were in critical condition, according to the hospitals. Among those were a 23-year-old woman in serious condition and an adolescent male in critical condition at University Hospital in San Antonio, Wolf said. Those taken to the hospital were hot to the touch and dehydrated, and no water was found inside the trailer, said Fire Chief Charles Hood. They were suffering from heat stroke and exhaustion, Hood said. It was a refrigerated tractor trailer, but there was no visible working AC unit on that rig. Those in the trailer were part of a presumed migrant smuggling attempt into the United States, and the investigation was being led by U.S. Homeland Security investigations, McManus said. Big rigs emerged as a popular smuggling method in the early 1990s amid a surge in U.S. border enforcement in San Diego and El Paso, Texas. Before that, people paid small fees to mom-and-pop operators to get them across a largely unguarded border. As crossing became exponentially more difficult after the 2001 terror attacks in the U.S., migrants were led through more perilous terrain and paid thousands of dollars more. Heat poses a serious danger, particularly when temperatures can rise severely inside vehicles. Temperatures in San Antonio on Monday approached 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Some advocates drew a link to the Biden administration's border policies. Aaron Reichland Melnick, policy director at the American Immigration Council, wrote that he had been dreading such a tragedy for months. With the border shut as tightly as it is today for migrants from Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador, people have been pushed into more and more dangerous routes. Truck smuggling is a way up, he wrote on Twitter. Migrants, largely from Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador, have been expelled more than 2 million times under a pandemic-era rule in effect since March 2020, that denies them a chance to seek asylum, but encourages repeat attempts because there are no legal consequences for getting caught. U.S. Customs and Border Protection reported 557 deaths on the southwest border in the 12-month period ending September 30th, more than double the 247 deaths reported in the previous year and the highest since it began keeping track in 1998. Most are related to heat exposure. CBP has not published a death tally for this year, but said that the Border Patrol performed 14,278 search and rescue missions in a 7-month period through May, exceeding the 12,833 missions performed during the previous 12-month period and up from 5,071 the year before. From the inside pages of the Standard Times, Wednesday, June 29th. Texas has little-used safe haven law. This allows parents to give up newborns at fire stations and hospitals. By Jaden Edison, Texas Tribune. Patsy Summey spent more than a decade with a nonprofit providing education about Texas's safe haven law. She distributed signs, gave presentations, helped with public service announcements, and cold emailed fire stations. The lifelong educator wanted to spread the word. If people were searching for a way to safely and legally relinquish their newborn babies, there is a law to help them. Some, because they don't know about it, they don't realize, I can go in the hospital and have this baby, leave and not take the baby with me. They can do that, Summey said. The idea behind Texas's safe haven law is simple. Any parent can bring their baby, who is less than 60 days old, to a fire station, hospital, or EMS station and hand it over, no questions asked. If the baby is unharmed, parents face no criminal charges and the Department of Family and Protective Services takes custody. Texas passed the law in 1999 under Governor George W. Bush. Since then, every other state has followed suit. Lawmakers envisioned the law as a solution to a spate of baby abandonments in Houston in the 90s. The law's proponents felt if one baby could be saved, it would be worth it. But the measure lacked funding. Proponents didn't think the bill could pass with a price tag attached. So third-party advocates tried to spread the word with PSAs and signs. Promotion of safe havens relied on the goodwill of volunteers like Summey, who is a retired teacher, and her group called Baby Moses Dallas. The U.S. Supreme Court cited safe haven laws when it overturned Roe v. Wade. In his majority opinion, finding that there's no constitutional right to an abortion, Justice Samuel Alito mentioned that all states have safe haven laws, which generally allow women to drop off babies anonymously. During the Supreme Court's oral arguments for the case last year, Justice Amy Coney Barrett explained why safe haven laws don't take care of the burdens of parenting. But in Texas, the law is rarely utilized. Just 172 infants have been relinquished under the safe haven law since 2009, according to data from the Department of Family and Protective Services. 21 babies were surrendered under the law in 2020, the most in 1 year during that time span. 7 infants have been relinquished so far this year. For comparison, there were more than 50,000 abortions in Texas last year, and the state had almost 370,000 live births in 2020. Experts contend that the safe haven law isn't used or known well enough to be a sufficient alternative to abortion, and because it allows parents to relinquish the newborns anonymously, the experts say, it's difficult to gather data on why parents make this choice. They also say it's not clear that the option will be utilized more in a post-Roe world. The justices seem to think that the existence of safe haven laws means that abortion can be outlawed with really no harm to women as a class, which I find very weird, said Jessica R. Pliley, a history professor at Texas State University who studies women, genders, and sexuality. It's a very strange argument because, first of all, safe haven laws in Texas, there's really just been not that many newborns surrendered or relinquished. In the Dobbs versus Jackson decision, justices' majority opinion mentioned anti-abortion advocates' belief that a woman who puts her newborn up for adoption today has little reason to fear that the baby will not find a suitable home. But that is not clear in Texas, where relinquished babies enter the care of the state's Department of Family and Protective Services. That agency is under federal monitoring after it was found to be routinely violating the constitutional rights of foster children and has gone from bad to worse in recent years. Independent experts describe the system as a disjointed and dangerous, where harm to children is at times overlooked, ignored, or forgotten. Abortion rights advocates say the safe haven argument ignores the idea that 9 months of pregnancy can have life-altering physical, emotional, financial, and professional impacts, even if the mother gives up the baby in the end. The idea that safe haven laws can be a solution to kind of the trials and tribulations that women who are seeking abortions face is actually disingenuous, Pliley said, particularly when we think about the women who most need access to reproductive health care and to abortion services. Alito cited other arguments that modern developments, such as health insurance or government assistance covering the cost of childbirth, maternity leave policies, and laws against pregnancy discrimination, provide the options or protections for pregnant people. But people of color have been most likely to access abortion care, make up the majority of people who are poor or low income and lack access to these resources, experts recently told the Tribune. Texas has the highest rate of uninsured women of reproductive age in the country. The state has one of the highest maternal mortality rates in the country, an investigation by USA Today found, and black women are disproportionately affected. Anti-abortion advocates acknowledge those issues in their comments after the ruling. Now the pro-life movement can expend even greater resources toward providing compassionate alternatives to abortion for women with unplanned pregnancies, the Texas Alliance for Life said in a statement. Our goal continues to build a society where abortion is unthinkable and women with unplanned pregnancies take full advantage of the vast resources available to them. From the front page of the Standard Times, published Tuesday, June 28th. Sorrow and pain a month after Uvalde rampage. We are basically in a state of undeclared civil war regarding mass shootings. By John Bacon, Trevor Hughes, and Grace Hawk, USA Today. The vigils, memorial services, and funerals are winding down in the southwest Texas hill country town of Uvalde, but the mourning is far from over. It's been 1 month since a gunman stormed into Robb Elementary, killing 19 children and two teachers. More than a dozen others were wounded, as was their psyche of the quiet town that burst sadly into the national spotlight. Services took place Saturday in San Angelo for Uzziah Garcia, 10, the last child to be buried. His aunt, Leticia Garcia, read a eulogy about the life Uzi lived and how the family has dealt with his loss. A couple nights ago, I got to see Uzi in my dream, she said. I kissed him, I hugged him, and I told him I loved him, and he told me he loved me. I told him Jesus loves you, and he told me Jesus loves you in my ear. Funerals can provide a sense of closure, a container for grief, and a ritual that helps communities process loss, said clinical psychologist David Reed, co-director of the Post-Traumatic Stress Center in New Haven, Connecticut. The community will require strong social and emotional support, beginning with the families of the victims, then for the students, he said. Trauma-informed strategies and safe spaces to share and process feelings will be vital to long-term healing, Johnson said. Moving beyond the immediate response, families will be faced with the long, difficult reality of life without their loved one, Johnson told USA Today. The community, no longer focused on a specific task at hand, will need to face the harder questions of what comes next for Robb Elementary School, for education, and for school safety. Uvalde is a grim symptom of a national illness. More people have died in mass killings in schools in the past 5 years than in the prior 12 years combined, according to a database of mass killings kept by USA Today, the Associated Press, and Northeastern University. Gunfire on school property is at an all-time high, according to the K-12 school shooting database at the Naval Postgraduate School's Center for Homeland Defense and Security. Firearms are the leading cause of death among children and teens in the U.S., according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. One of the most traumatizing aspects of mass shootings in the U.S. is that our many circles of communities, family, local, and national, do not have time to process the horror of our loss before we are battered by another ghastly shooting, said Carrie Winter, professor of American Studies at the State University of New York at Buffalo. We are basically in a state of undeclared civil war. A community buries 19 children. Uvalde and its 16,000 residents are a small town with a strong Latino culture and a big heart. Coming together to support friends and loved ones is a given. Two funeral homes said they would not charge families of victims for services. Aided by nationwide support, GoFundMe campaigns for the families of the victims raised more than $5 million within days of the carnage. Also within days, Amory Jo Garza, 10, was one of the first to be laid to rest. Classmates said she was trying to call 911 on her new cell phone when she was shot. Amory Jo was a Girl Scout and proud of her badges she earned. The Girl Scouts were proud of her, too, posthumously awarding Amory one of the highest honors in Girl Scouting, the Bronze Cross. It is awarded for saving or attempting to save a life at the risk of the Girl Scout's own life. On May 24th, Amory did all she could to save the lives of her classmates and teachers, the organization said. We will carry her story with us always and ensure her brave actions will endure for generations. A few days later, Eliana Ellie Garcia was buried, the day after she was supposed to turn 10. Her family had been planning a big party, and Ellie hoped to receive gifts related to the Disney movie Encanto. Ellie loved making videos and practiced a dance with her older sister for her quinceañera party, the celebration of a girl's 15th birthday, even though it was years away. The family faces a long road to recovery, said Ellie's aunt, Sarah Arizmendi. It is just sad for all the children. Layla Salazar, 11, was one of the last children to be buried. Layla loved swimming and running. She was a fan of the Dallas Cowboys and loved dancing to TikTok videos, said her father, Vincent. She won races at Robb Elementary's Field Day. He shared photos of her winning ribbons on social media. Grieving is a process, said Ogbonya Amenka, an assistant professor and director of diversity at the Butler University College of Pharmacy and Health Science. For public health, the more the support for the grieving, the shorter their recovery process and return to their roles in society. How does a community move on? Controversy over police actions in the minutes after the shooting started has not made the healing process easier. There were enough officers on the scene to have stopped the gunman 3 minutes after he entered the building, the director of the Texas Department of Public Safety testified this week. Steve McGraw described the police response as an abject failure that ignored lessons from previous shootings and put the lives of officers ahead of the lives of children. McGraw blamed the incident commander, Pete Arredondo, the school district's police chief, for stopping officers from quickly confronting the gunman. Arredondo said he did all he could and pointed to the effort to evacuate hundreds of students from other classrooms during the tragedy. Many parents want him out. In any public health intervention, controversy, unfortunately, can become a weakening distraction against the solutions, immediate and long-term, Omenka said, referencing an African proverb, "When elephants fight, the grasses suffer." Nancy Sutton, a professional school portrait photographer, has taken pictures of virtually every student at Uvalde schools for the past 20 years. That includes victims of the attack at Robb Elementary. Sutton said the community is taking great care of the families. Recovery has been made more difficult by bad press over how the shooting was handled, she said. And most residents are upset with the police and city officials and want action. We are all still grieving, and it will take a while, she said. The families are holding strong, but of course want answers. I don't blame them. It's so heartbreaking to see what it's done to our community and our school district. Part of a population's recovery from a public health tragedy is understanding the contributing factors to the problem and figuring out ways to prevent it from recurring or to deal with it if it returns, Omenka said. This might result in controversy and exacerbation of the emotional suffering brought about by the problem. If, for instance, there is evidence or the public believe that more actions could have been taken to prevent or solve the problem, he said. Community grieving may transform in a number of ways, said Johnson, the clinical psychologist. The event can be avoided and its memory suppressed, leading to unaddressed trauma that will fester for years. Or, as in Parkland, Florida, where a teen fired on students and staff at Majorie Stoneman Douglas High, killing 17 people in 2018, it can build into sustained activism and community conversation, Johnson said. Only by accepting the reality of what has happened can a community find creative new ways to support each other and heal together over time, he said. The trauma and loss of May 24th, 2022 will never leave the community of Uvalde. But if properly and consistently addressed, hopefully its suffering can be transformed into a more compassionate and empathetic society. Pain and shock are part of the process, said Sandy Phillips, who lost her daughter, Jessica Redfield Guayi, in a shooting in 2012 at a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado. Guayi was among 12 people killed during a midnight showing of The Dark Knight Rises. Phillips has an idea of what Uvalde survivors face. They're in shock, she said. They can't think clearly. I could not comprehend things. I was unable to read a book from cover to cover for 9 years, and that is not unusual. Frank DeAngelis was the principal at Columbine High School in Littleton, Colorado in 1999 when two students opened fire, killing 12 students and a teacher. He said Columbine High is stronger than ever. So many times people ask me, when will we get back to normal? But you really do have to redefine what is normal, he said. This doesn't have to define the community. Authorities plan to raise Robb Elementary, but experts said unseen scars can linger for decades. In Uvalde, residents said some things won't change. Jesse Flores, 51, said he won't lock his doors more often and won't treat outsiders any differently after the shooting. We can tell when people come from out of town. We treat them like anyone else, like their family, said Flores, who runs a store downtown. One event is not going to change the way I act. Now here is a column from Allison Watkins. Insect pests need to be monitored during summer months. Published June 27th, special to the San Angelo Standard-Times. West Texas summers are always tough, but this year it is especially hot and dry, tempting for even the most dedicated gardener to hibernate inside the air conditioning and forget about the yard for a while. But one thing to keep on top of through the summer is scouting for insect pests. Drought can decrease some insect populations, but there are still always plenty to go around, even in dry years. Watch out for things like June bugs and chinch bugs in the lawn, spider mites and squash bugs in the vegetable garden, and lace bugs on lantana. Spider mites are small and hard to see and can seem to suddenly devastate tomatoes and other garden crops. Scout regularly to catch them before they get out of control. Take a magnifying glass to inspect underneath the leaves and shake the plant over a white sheet of paper to check for any tiny specks that move around. Spider mites are arachnids, not insects, so they are harder to control. But products like neem oil or insecticidal soap can help. And releasing beneficials such as predatory mites, ladybugs, and green lacewings can help as well. Caterpillars can damage landscape and vegetable plants such as walnut caterpillar or webworm on pecan trees, Sephora worms on Texas mountain laurel, tomato hornworms on vegetables, and army worm in the lawn. BT, also known as Thuricide Caterpillar Killer, is a good option that is effective and non-toxic to other types of insects. Just be careful not to let it drift onto butterfly plants, as it will kill beneficial butterfly caterpillars as well. Spinosad is another good option for caterpillars and is also effective against a wider range of insect pests. If there are small dead patches in the lawn, check for grubs. Use a shovel to dig two lines forming an L and see if the grass pulls up like a carpet, and look for white C-shaped grubs. If present, treat with an insecticide labeled for grubs in the lawn, such as Carbaryl. Chinch bugs thrive in St. Augustine lawns in hot, dry weather. If there are stressed or damaged spots, check for them by pouring a bucket of soapy water in the affected area. Wait for up to 20 minutes, and if chinch bugs, small insects with a black body and white wings, emerge to the top of the ground, treat with an insecticide such as Carbaryl or bifenthrin. Don't overdo it with pesticides. When used correctly, they can keep landscapes and gardens from being damaged. But if used too frequently or used improperly, they can damage populations of beneficial insects and make pest problems worse. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu. And now a column from Allison Watkins, special to the San Angelo Standard Times. Summer can be a good time for planning, not working, in your garden. Published June 23rd. The heat, lack of rain, and excessive wind are all making it a tough summer for landscapes and gardens. The main task for the season is watering. Keep lawns watered weekly as efficiently as possible. Do an irrigation audit to make sure the system is working properly and not wasting water. It's also important to water shade trees, even if they are mature and well-established and usually don't need supplemental irrigation. Replenish mulch in beds to help conserve water and help plants make it through the heat. The middle of summer is not conducive to a lot of landscaping labor. It's tough on the gardener, and it's the hardest time of year to establish new plants. But as some of the landscaping work slows down, it's a good time of year to evaluate the overall design and functionality of the yard and make plans for future planting and improvements. Fall is the best time of year to plant, so make plans now to have the most success. Here are some basic landscape design principles to keep in mind when assessing an existing landscape for potential changes, or for starting from scratch and landscaping a new construction home. First, be mindful of tree and shrub placement. These foundation plantings are the most permanent part of the landscape and take time to establish, especially trees, so don't be careless in where they end up. A common mistake is planting large shade trees in front of the home. A home is a very valuable possession and should be showcased, not covered up. If trees already exist in front, consider raising the canopy so the home stands out. For planting new trees, place them at 45-degree angles off the front corners of the home. This will frame the home and create a more inviting appearance. Choose dwarf shrubs for the front of the home. Shrubs that will not grow too large and require frequent pruning and shearing to keep them from covering up windows. place the smallest shrubs in the center, and increase the height towards the sides of the home. Use large shrubs or small trees at the corners to make the home seem wider. Don't stagger small shrubs with large ones across the home, but aim for a smooth transition from small in the middle to larger at the sides. The most aesthetically pleasing shrub and flower beds are deep and have wide, broad curves, rather than small, narrow beds that have straight lines and sharp angles. Ideally, the beds should be about as deep as the height of the home, if possible, but smaller yards may limit this goal. Save the date. The Fall Landscaping Symposium, hosted by the Concho Valley Master Gardeners, is set for Saturday, September 10th, and there is an excellent lineup of speakers covering topics such as overcoming landscape design challenges, lawn care, planting trees, pass-along plants, plant propagation, and floral design from the home landscape. See the details at https://txmg.org/Concho Valley and register online at https://cvmg.square.site. For more information, contact the extension office at 325-659-6522. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.